Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dadley Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Culture, to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review Raw, but also SmackDown, NXT, but AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a round of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamflett Sidgwick, still enjoying some well-earned time off. Well, we are here, Hamflett, to talk about
Monday Night Raw!
And it's changing, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is. Last week's Raw, I think a lot of people went in with the expectations that everything, the rug was going to be pulled out from underneath the whole show. And we talked about it in across various podcasts that ultimately the changes Triple H were going to eventually try and make, would a lot of them would be subtle. A lot of them would be behind the scenes stuff as he gradually works into position. It was unknown and it'll remain unknown probably forever if basically Vince McMahon's just a shadow operative regardless. And he's like, maybe Michael Cole doesn't have a headset connected to Triple H, but for all we know, Triple H has got one connected to Vince McMahon. Like something along those lines, you know, like maybe what we think and what we might perceive might not be the case. And yet, much in the same way that when Paul Heyman came in, and there was a lot for the worse, truthfully, but some for the better, and some things that you could definitely tie to all the bookers have got the quirks and the tricks and the traits. And there were certain things at the time when Paul Heyman came in that you could see were the things that he liked to do. This was absolutely a Raw with a load of things Triple H liked to do. I like this episode a lot, and I loved some of the specific choices that we'll get into as we go along here. But I think what's going to happen over the next few months is that almost every single change is going to be observed through this prism of, is that a Triple H move or not? Mm-hmm. I think that's impossible not to for a lot. Anybody that knows the reality of what's going on, I think a lot of WWE's very casual audience, of which we know there to be absolutely tons, might just think, oh, well, I did or I didn't like the person that was on TV this week. They're not going to see this as a big stylistic shift. But for those that maybe know what they're looking for, you're going to see things. Of course you are. But this was basically 2018 NXT Black and Red. And I say that like for better and for worse.
Yeah.
There would be people that, like, and your mileage is going to vary on these Raws depending on that. You know, like, those takeovers from that era were of a god tier at point, but the NXT ratings were never amazing when they were published, when it was a network exclusive show. And NXT as a TV show wasn't necessarily for everybody, but it had a fantastic women's division. Tommaso Ciampa always did well. And the match quality, by and large, was good to very good with occasional flashes of great. And most importantly, and we're going to get to that loads throughout here, basics, fundamentals. Even when you can't...
Great fundamentals.
Even when you can't be electrifying, be solid. And I know that that's a bit boring, but I've tweeted about this morning. Triple H has the lowest bar for any mainstream major wrestling show in history to step over here. Like, people were excited at Jimmy Smith and Michael Cole over the weekend saying fans. That's the standard that Triple H has to hit, right? So already people will, like, this was probably the best Raw of the year. And all it did was get several basics right. And yes, that might sound like when yesterday we're coming on a podcast and I'm saying our Rampage feels inessential. Like, it's because they're on completely different wavelengths. Mm. The standards are completely different. AEW made its modus operandi very early Like Cedric referenced the Simpsons gag, don't do what Donnie WWE does. Mm. That was like AEW's simplest core principle. And weirdly, Triple H has led with one of his of, well, spot what AEW aren't doing and do loads and loads of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not suggesting that's one of the reasons why he's focused so much on what we're going to talk about a lot on this episode of Raw, but he just knows what he likes, and lots of that was evidenced throughout this particular Raw. Lots of it.
A lot of wrestling on this Monday Night Raw.
Like a lot of it, a real lot of it, and we're sometimes, this might sound weird, especially if you've only listened to this podcast for the first time, because this was a Raw that actually generated conversation. Mm-hmm. So maybe you found us and welcome if you're brand new. But like regular listeners will know, we are sometimes critical of good wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And that isn't meant to sound as bad faith as it might do verbally as it would written down. Capital G, capital W, good wrestling. There is loads of good wrestling. It's almost like where the reality of the spoiled wrestling fan, what have you done for me lately?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I need great wrestling. If AEW are going to give us 4 stars a week guaranteed on a Dynamite, like what can you really do for me? I don't think there was a single match on this Raw that was to the standard of like the weekly Dynamite Ripper. And yet, loads of it was so good, packaged in this very focused and carefully plotted Raw, that I was glad to see it.
Mm.
I wasn't bored by it. This wasn't late era Black and Gold NXT in the CWC or the empty Full Sail, where you're just like, oh God, I don't care. I do not care. This is not what I want anymore. Main roster WWE desperately needs consistent quality. For some people, it'll take years.
Yeah. You
need 52 weeks of this Raw for 5 years to be convinced that Vince McMahon is definitely gone and change can actually happen. But it felt refreshing this week, genuinely so.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll talk about Ciampa in due course, but I also want to mention, just so great to see, like you say, the prominence of women's wrestling on this show, the through line of a story with them explaining why these three women have come together. Mm. And yeah, for a show that had several DQs, I was kind of okay with all that. I mean, you know, like you say, it's slow change within WWE. I don't think anyone anticipates that we're going to get no countouts and no DQs.
Some
for the
did,
next six
I
months.
Think. Some did.
You're insane if you think that. That's, you know, indelibly burned into WWE. It's going to take a long time to get rid of that. Think of it of getting rid of a tattoo. You have to go for several sessions before you can, you know, really notice that that's starting to fade away a little bit now.
You know, my dad had like a lot of 80s and 70s social club, like working men's club tattoos. Loads of them, right? So like all like sort of below elbow to hand, which as a result, he like discouraged me from getting them with that old mindset of, well, you're not going to get a job if you've got DNA, which is not really the case anymore, but that was his view. And he got the one, he had swallows on his hands, which was really common from that era. He had them removed, but this was either, it was either pre-laser surgery's prominence or it just, he couldn't get it on the NHS and we didn't have the money. So what, do you know what they did?
Oh no.
I know, right? So they had to go in for various sessions and they like cut the skin where the tattoo was and then stretched the remaining hand skin over the top of it. I see his hand sometime and I'm like, yeah, that's like a bit flattering to me. Oh my God, that's why I forgot. Like there's like frigging Dusty Rhodes head or something on my dad's hands in the place where swallows used to be.
Well, that sounds like watching old episodes of Raw used to feel like. Let's see how this week's works out, because the show opened with the man. She's back, Becky Lynch. But she's her arm is in a sling. She's separated her shoulder at the premium live event over the weekend. We all saw that. That image.
Mm-hmm.
That's not meant to look like that sort of a shape.
No.
And they showed the video package of everything with the match at SummerSlam with Bianca and, of course, the post-match angle. She talked about hitting rock bottom and not knowing who she was without the championship. But at SummerSlam, she finally remembered who the hell she was. It wasn't in the fancy clothes. It was in the relentlessness and the pursuit to be better today than she was yesterday. Look, she said she could have given up at SummerSlam when she separated her shoulder, but she got it out through a very painful 20 minutes, the most painful 20 minutes of her career. She didn't just do it for herself. She wanted to create the greatest women's division they ever had. And if that Sasha and Naomi rumor is true, then pretty much have it. All the women she was doing it for who worked their asses off every week. When she lost, she knew she'd given her best. It just wasn't good enough. She wasn't defined by one match or by the title. She defined the match. She defined the title. And she wasn't defined by the man. She defined the man. Huge beb for that. She planned on starting the greatest comeback ever. But she also wanted to thank someone for making her the BEST that she could be. And she called out Bianca Belair. Belair was very nice towards her as well. She said, "You don't just define the man, you are the man." And Lynch told her, "Hold it down, B. I'll see you soon." And Lynch left. And it was all very ominous. And you thought, no, don't walk back there on your own. There's three women coming for you. I can see where this is going. Belair cut a promo about Lynch, saying she's got nothing but respect for her. You know, she hasn't forgotten the underhanded things that she did, but she didn't want to be handed anything. Lynch made her work for it. She shook her hand at SummerSlam. They had mutual respect, and it meant something to have respect from Lynch. Belair's ready for her next challenger, whether that was Bayley or her new friends. And of course, that means that they cut to the back, where Bayley and her new friends, Dakota Kai and Io Sky, are attacking Becky Lynch, targeting her arm, targeting her shoulder with that steel chair. And by the time Belair sprints to the back, these three gits are nowhere to be seen. What do you make of this opening?
Brilliant. Well, absolutely f***ing brilliant. Like, just, it's like the checklist straight away of the things you want, ideally. Like, ultimately, it's WWE Raw. You kind of said it at the start, right? We're a long way away from sort of getting rid of show opening promos, full stop, and the Welcome to Monday Night Raw, and the game show host adjacent rule of being a top star in WWE. That might never change, in fact. But in terms of how you fold those tropes into pro wrestling, there was no better version than this. So Becky Lynch cuts, like, a very good promo on its own terms, right? It really stands up for itself. It's refreshing to see her talking like this. She doesn't come out in the ostentatious, crazy clothes. Like, and that's a choice. Clearly, that's a choice. Like, she comes out in, like, something that's basically a hybrid of when she was just the man and in, like, the leather. And then, like, with shiny leather pants. So you can see it's all a phase. It's a phasing down and an ultimate phasing out of one character and back into the other one that people beloved. It feels real. Right, so like it feels completely organic that in fact, as she appeared on the SummerSlam stage in all the crazy gear and his big time Bex, it wasn't, it's still who I am. This is kind of my last roll of the dice. Yes. And we got to, I said this on the SummerSlam thing, I will maintain forever that the saga of Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair started as a lie, as a complete fabrication. But they absolutely earned and made one by the end. They created one. And when you do that, you get a promo like this that gets to tie a bow on it, because how often in wrestling, no, not wrestling, in WWE do things actually get to be conclusive?
Yeah.
This was conclusive. A feud has happened. Matches have happened. The winner and loser have been decided. Results, finishes, game over.
Belair, like, looks bigger as a result of this as well.
Massively still. Because a huge star has profoundly put her over and over again, physically and verbally. Like, that's the way that all of this is always supposed to work. Best version of the basics. So the promo was excellent. You get this, and then, of course, you get the tease of the return of the man. So you're given something on the way out of Becky Lynch. This injury is the best possible thing that could have happened. I don't know how worked it is, and I'm assuming not that much, but in terms of, like, a timeline for recovery or whatever, I don't know any of the details about that. But frankly, it doesn't matter.
Close the Rumble betting now.
Well, you've got, like, two injured wrestlers that are potentially going to return and win them both, haven't you? But, like, this couldn't be better. She leaves, closing the door on the Bianca Belair story, indeed on the big-time Bex character. You get to miss her for a little bit, but you don't just get to miss her. You get to look forward to the pop of the return of the babyface as well at the same time, not least when heels now get to run roughshod over Raw with presumably what would have been one of their biggest, like, rivals and one of Raw's biggest defenders gone and out of the picture, which, of course, opens the door for the people it would later open the door for on the later on in this episode. The beatdown was predictable. Bianca Belair kind of didn't look stupid for being drawn away, because she was called out to the ring by Becky Lynch and then told to take the stage.
Yeah.
Becky Lynch didn't say, right, we're cool, let's go backstage together because there might be a threat. She was like, this is your moment. This is what you're supposed to do. You've got the belt, and like, heavy is the head that wears the crown. Here you go. So even that was thought about enough. This is why, like, the NXT comparisons were, like, there from the off. You just have to think about everything making just enough sense for pro wrestling to function and to work, and all of this did. And right out the gate, in the opening segment of the night, you've established this new character for Becky, you've re-established Bianca Belair as the boss of this whole show, and Bayley's new group. Not that anybody missed SummerSlam, but if you miss SummerSlam, you know already what you need to know about this group, because they're going to feature massively on the show. This was excellent.
And then it was followed by this excellent video package, putting over the legacy, ironically, of the United States title. It was narrated by JBL, and it showcased a whole host of former United States champions, and you know, with that, the prestige that goes with it. Harley Race, Sergeant Slaughter, Rowdy Roddy Piper, Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair, JBL, Scott Hall, Brett Hall, Brett Hall and Bret Hart.
Yeah.
John Cena, Ricky Steamboat, Booker T, Kofi Kingston, Rick Rude, Mr. Perfect, Edge, Miz, Randy Orton, Seth Rollins, and of course, Bobby Lashley. This was like, for something so simple, I've seen a big buzz. I'm all about vibes this year. And the vibes coming off of this show from a spot we're going to talk about in a minute, from results and from simple stuff like this, just really just for me, showcase a change in the waters.
Well, simple stuff is right, but what enhanced this video specifically this week, I think, is the optimism that comes with the new regime, I guess, Triple H taking over. They could have run a video like this once before, and they might, like, I remember them running one on the Intercontinental title when they were folding it up in the Kane and Triple H match, right? But they could have run a video like this before, but within 3 weeks, there was every chance that, I don't know, somebody would stick some chewing gum on the US title or just something like, or Bobby Lashley, despite being US champion, would suddenly find his match interrupted by the 24/7 division,
yes,
whatever. And then whatever you've done for this video is immediately undermined because it's been a month. And hang on, I thought like last month you were telling me this was basically like nearly as good as holding the Universal title. And now it's like a fart in a round belt. That might happen, but there is no, there's absolutely no precedent for how Triple H is going to treat this. So for the, you, there's a lot of benefit of the doubt that you get to give him if you want to. Some people might not, but like I think it's okay to at this point.
The only thing you can draw comparison to is the North American title, the mid-card title from NXT.
Well, indeed.
And my word, what?
And for, like for the longest time, that was held in like almost as high esteem as the world title in NXT. So he's used a bit of history. And more importantly as well, like although it could get screwed up, it's WWE and he's got to like hold, like the, he's got to hold quite a tight grip on the reins. This is better than doing nothing.
Yeah.
And this is why I keep going back to the low bar. There are things that I want to shower with praise, like the Becky Lynch promo. There are things I'm going to be more cautious about. And I advise people to exhibit a bit of caution with this optimism and stuff. And I do, because it'd be a shame to see it thrown away so quickly. But wrestling fans are patient and willing to give a lot for very little. And just being asked with a video package to care about the belt ahead of a series of really high quality matches that elevated it later on in the show, like they'll easily now go along for the ride of the match next week being like a Raw main event. I could go on last next week after 1 week of like raising the stakes and raising the drama.
And especially because they announced these matches in advance and you were like, cool, these are two matches I really want to see.
Yeah, like do we pretty much record the Raw preview as late as we can.
Mm-hmm.
On a Monday before we all leave work for the day. And we were probably just behind, like, 3/4 of a card getting announced yesterday.
Yes.
And it kind of, as a result, it probably undermined the messaging of Triple H's first full Raw, where we're on here, like, sort of, time to play the game! Like, because we're needing to find, like, what do we do? Like, a perfect example, right? Us, having reviewed WWE shows weekly for 4+ years now, need an opponent for Bobby Lashley in one of the like least interesting things coming out of SummerSlam, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Like Bobby Lashley needs an opponent. Like what do we do as wrestling analysts, as people that like try and come up with fantasy booking, predict things, No, we press a button and like you randomly scroll WWE.com because that's what we've been trained to do for years and years and years. And then we press submit and the podcast goes out and then Triple H like effectively books a mini tournament to conclude next week with a major stakes title match. Like, there's a good example of the difference playing out. If only these are short-term things to try and get a lot of people on side, they're good right now.
More fallout from SummerSlam. We got a video from Logan Paul on social media saying he doesn't know when he's going to be back, but he loved it. You know, he wants to do this for a career. He's going to be back soon. He can't wait. And I think they mentioned Triple H is going to be on the Impulsive podcast as well.
Yeah, that's, you know, noteworthy following this Raw and I guess following Triple. I'll tell you what. 2003 Triple H would love how 2022 is going because you've got this massive, Brock Lesnar lifts a ring up, right? Bayley comes back, the women's division's exploding. You've got this Raw, who are people talking about? Triple H. Like, this is one of like, the smartest ones. He had to beat like 20 guys every week to get this kind of conversation going. It was never positive. Like he's won again.
Mm-hmm.
He's a cerebral assassin.
He's not quite Jeff Jarrett, but
he's getting there. Like, the two of them are having conversations. They're comparing notes backstage.
Then we got the first of these triple threat matches. The winners of the triple threat matches would then face each other later on in the night for the right to face Lashley next week. It was Mustafa Ali, someone we've campaigned to see more on TV, of course, against The Miz, against AJ Styles. And, you know, early on, it's you by the numbers, sort of triple threat. I'll knock you out of the ring. We'll do two things, you know, two of us will do stuff together. But my word, did this hit a gear. Mm. Ali hit a rolling neck breaker on Styles, who reversed DDT's Miz at the same time. That was great. Ali also hit this wild tornado DDT off the apron to Styles that looked like it was something out of a computer game or something. Ali's getting back in the ring following that. Miz catches him in the ropes. Skull-crushing finale, but Miz's injured ribs because of the table spot from the Logan Paul match means it takes his time getting to the cover, and that allows Ali to kick out. And in a spot that you've no doubt seen all over social media, even if you haven't watched Raw, the finish... The finish.
Oh my God.
Ali 450 splashes Miz, but his momentum sends him into the arms of AJ Styles, who hits a Styles Clash on Ali onto Miz for the 1-2-3. Huge pep. Phenomenal, ironically.
Yeah.
Finish this.
Fantastic. Off the back of a match that, as you say, like, grew into something almost quite special, quite honestly, from the early goings that seemed to be following formula. This had the timing, the pacing, and the agenting of one of the most Let the Wrestlers Wrestle matches I've seen in WWE for months. Months and months. I would have to be going back to that that little cycle of tag matches on Raw, like sort of pre-WrestleMania, to think of a time when there was matches that were taking place that felt actually in the hands of the wrestlers themselves. This match had character. Like, the wrestlers individually were performing as their characters would do to perform. You know, we've talked a lot, and like AEW have shown this over and over and over again, how this is absolutely still the way to do business. The old ways still make the most sense. One guy goes over, one guy gets over. In this case, two, because the Miz got to sell the ramifications of what happened to him at SummerSlam. And like, think when wrestlers will believe that the things that have happened to them are real, you will too.
Yes.
Like, I said this about Bayley coming back and targeting Bianca Belair. Like, she thinks this is real because it's fucking supposed to be.
Yeah.
So we will as well. The Miz coming out with the taped ribs is thus selling the impact. Logan Paul has just appeared on camera saying, I'm going to have Triple H on my podcast. That could all feel a little bit fluffy and lightweight, but the guy that's competing for a belt is selling the impact of having to fight him. So tacitly, that gets Logan Paul over as somebody that the next opponent should be worried about. Really, really simple stuff. Next on the agenda is Mustafa Ali, that has been told to, like, to me at least, feels like, go out there and get yourself over, kid.
Yeah.
So the three of them work together, and it's like, well, what are we doing for Ali this week? Because he's getting beat. He's not winning, but he doesn't need the win. What he needs is, like, the reminder. It's WWE. You've just got to go out there and show people. You've got to go out there and do something that gets gift or gets talked about. And you said it yourself. In this case, it was the finish. People can watch wrestling in a sophisticated way now to know that rather than this just being a spectacular move on its own terms, it's how everybody comes together to make it so. And people will watch this and be like, wow, amazing finish. Wow, really cool cooperation between AJ Styles and Ali. Mm-hmm. People will think better of Ali after the fact. Great, great, great.
Postman Pierce is checking on Lynch along with a trainer in the trainer's room, and then Sarah Schreiber goes and chats to Bayley and her new mates for comment on their actions, and they say, this isn't about Becky Lynch, this is about us, and you'll find out more soon enough. I'm hooked, absolutely. They go to leave, the Usos bump into them, give a little bit of a nod of acceptance, of like, yeah, I can see what you're doing. Schreiber asks the Usos about defending their tag team titles against the Mysterios later, and they run through the fact that, well, we're just going to do everything we've done again.
Yeah.
Roman beat Brock on Saturday. Again. We beat the Street Profits. Again. Tonight's going to be no different. We're just going to win again, and we're going to beat the Mysterios again. I love these two. When Roman's not there, they really do represent the bloodline great, I think.
I think, I'm probably not as high on them as you are, but I will say for the Usos and the bloodline in general, with less lazy direction, these are beginning to feel like main event acts and good surrogates for Roman Reigns. I kind of wish Paul Heyman was with them all the time. I think that would be my one thing. Like, I think that would add something to that. It's like, it's not about who's not there in Roman Reigns. It's about who is here, which is everybody else. But it's not the first time they've been in like a TV main event and expected to carry the load. And they did so here, like later on, brilliantly.
Then we got Seth Rollins hosting a celebration because we don't have to see or hear from the original idiot.
Got him.
Riddle, which is good because that's sort of the pattern that Rollins has.
Yeah.
He said, and I did like the line, Riddle, you wanted to be so much like your best mate, Randy, that you just like him. Now you're both on the fucking shelf. And then he hints about turning his attention to Roman Reigns and the world title. And this gets a great reaction mm-hmm. from the fans. Before he could continue, though, the Street Profits interrupt. Rollins doesn't want to share any time or any air time or any airspace with a bunch of losers. The biggest losers in WWE. How many times have you lost to the Usos now? He said, you might as well break up. I do like it sometimes when they acknowledge the thing that we're all going, love
it's,
that.
Yeah, it's out there.
And Angelo Dawkins says, you do know we beat you to become the tag team champions. And Rollins just, no, different time. Montez Ford reminds everyone, lovely line again, you lost to Cody Rhodes when he had one boobie. Tickle me that. And Rollins gets fired up, of course, threatens to stomp him, but then says, no, I wouldn't fight you, obviously, because there's two of you, there's only one of me. And Dawkins is like, well, that's fine. One of us will fight you then. You want to see us beat up Rollins tonight? Crowd love it. And they suggest a game of rock, paper, scissors. They get a referee out there to judge it. But as they're about to do it, Montez Ford just grabs a ref and runs to the ring anyway, which is, you know, kind of what we wanted to see. And then we got Seth Rollins versus Montez Ford. Anything you want to say about the promo beforehand? I thought it was very slick in terms of getting to what they needed to do.
Do you know what I really liked about this? The acknowledgement of old wins and losses. Like, again, like, pretend that the wrestlers have, like we know The Miz has got a really good handle on his CV.
Yeah.
But most of them are asked to forget what happened, like, in the last segment, let alone over the last couple of years of their career. And there's so much content that they're almost encouraged to. You as a fan are encouraged to forget when people have overlapped. So I really appreciated that. And and obviously this would come up in the result and the follow-through. Montez Ford, like, bit of a dick move. Like, to ban, I know it's done in jest, but like, Angelo Dawkins wanted the match and was ready to rock, paper, scissors for it. So, yeah, not cool, Montez. Mm. Not cool.
But again, another case of getting over in defeat here. Montez Ford got a lot of the shine for the majority of this match. High crossbody from him, which always looks great. He hit a standing moonsault and a running blockbuster for several two counts. He also hit a tornado DDT. Which looked like he might have the match won, but Rollins got a rope break. Rollins fired back up, though, hit Tez with a buckle bomb and a falcon arrow, which looked great for a near fall. Ford dodges a frog splash, goes for one of his own, but Rollins gets the knees up, and then as Montez Ford is writhing around selling that, Rollins hits his curb stomp. 1, 2, 3. Sets up for another one, but thankfully Dawkins runs down to save his pal because he's a good friend, but... Yeah, hell of a showcase for the potential of Montez Ford as a solo star, I thought, here.
Another great week, yeah, for Montez Ford as a singles wrestler. And they are, hopefully, it would appear, managing the Street Profits breakup excellently.
Mm.
They're creating tension around who might turn on who. They're, like, things have gone off the rails. Like, it's a losing streak with a goal in mind. It's not just, you're not just beating guys every week for no reason. Like, as you said, when Seth Rollins acknowledges it out front, like, that's... another character saying what we're all thinking. So this is how it's supposed to be playing out. Angelo Dawkins, a great friend, right, was there to stop the to stop the beatdown after the fact. Didn't fancy going down to ringside after he got kind of screwed on the paper scissors stone thing, did he? So they're like, again, like as with SummerSlam, you're starting to build things that Montez Ford can be a little bit irrationally pissed off with Angelo Dawkins about,
yep.
Such as, where were you last week? Well, you wanted the match so much, I just thought I'd wait back. Like, all these things create very believable tension between the two. So, and I think it's going to be Ford, but if and when one snaps and turns on the other, there's going to be all this justification and vindication. Mm. This is not just happening for the sake of it. It's going to mean something. It's going to matter when they do fall apart. And it's sad to watch it happening. You're hating seeing these mates come apart, but it's like, that's the drama of it. That's the emotion of it.
A word on Rollins. We talk every week about how great Montez Ford is, whether he's in a tag match or a singles match. But Rollins saying, I want to go after the world title and having a statement victory like that just backs it up.
Yeah, he's talking a big game, but for the bulk of this year, he's wrestled it too. So it doesn't feel fake at all.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Right, then we got a video package for what happened with Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, which can't really do it justice, regardless of what you did. But I did like the little plug for Reigns versus Drew McIntyre with all the dragons and the fire. That's what Wales literally looks like
all the time.
International listeners.
And if you don't believe us, just ask Wales resident Drew McIntyre.
In his backyard.
That's it, in his home patch of land.
Right, mixed emotions about what came next, because it was Alexa Bliss versus Asuka.
Skip.
Yeah, we should explain this one, because we were sort of hesitant to even have a skip on this show, because we wanted to really analyse what it was. But it was a DQ.
Yeah.
But it was also a DQ that, I'll allow it, for where it went on this show. It didn't just have a DQ and they went, well, on to the next match and we'll never see or hear from these women again. It was...
For the first time ever... Skip means more on this later.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
Never meant that before.
Right, well, enough of all that. It's now time for this.
It's short, it's crap, it's wrestling related. The five-star review. Nailed it!
I'm not doing a noise. I refuse to do the noise.
This week's five-star review is brought to you by Jason Fratto. If you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related, although this isn't crap. What we're about to talk about is very, very good. You can do so by subscribing to What Culture Wrestling on iTunes and leaving us a five-star review on there. Or, if you'd rather, you can leave us a five-star review on Spotify. And then, as Jason has done, email me your review, adam.wilborn@whatculture.com. Jason writes, hello, Adam, and the man, the myth, the legend, Michael Hamflett.
Whoa, thanks, Jason.
I use Spotify, so I gave you five stars, but I thought I'd email my five-star review request. I've been listening to you for years now, and I've decided that I will be the anti-Matt Reigns. As a fellow Marylander like Reigns, I feel we need the balance in our great state. Sidgwick has his mega fans, but I will be the head honcho of the Hamflett Hero to Humans fan club.
Wait a minute, that's Triple H. Like,
we'll play Quirtle, eat Hot Pockets and dry hamburgers.
Yes.
And dream about the beautiful face of Gunther all day long.
You know, like, Matt Reigns is like sort of an anti-tourist board advertisement for Maryland. Like, I'm back in. Like, I've always wanted to go on the bus tour of Baltimore and stay on the bus because I'm scared of it. But that's all the more reason to go to Maryland. And they, like, obviously, it's a hell of a platform to take as well, to put that guy in his place. I'm not advocating that you go around, find where he lives and beat him up. I'm not suggesting that in a public platform.
Anyway, Jason continues. As Sidgwick isn't around this week, I thought a good starting point for the five-star review would be something we all know our hunk-in-chief loves.
Who's that? I'm looking behind
TNA. If there's something with the main event mafia that strikes your fancy or any other amazing storyline that you like to detail, I bow down to our great podcaster's choice. I've truly enjoyed all of your great banter over the years. As a fellow father of a special needs son, it means a lot to hear all the great work you do, Hamflett, to raise awareness for Down syndrome and to be the best father you can possibly can be. And as for you, Adam Wilborn, said in the best Vince Russo accent possible, I'll just say this.
Hey, you all right?
Thank you again, gentlemen. Your daily podcast bring a joy and passion back to wrestling that I'd missed for years. Sincerely, Jason Fratto. Thank you so much for that, Jason.
That's a lovely message. Thank you, Jason. Really appreciate that. really appreciate any opportunity you've drilled into. Obviously, one of my great loves is that, I would say specifically pre-Hogan Bischoff ruining everything and taking all my dreams away, yeah. TNA. It's great to talk about the main event mafia. And we sort of are here. But oddly enough, you couldn't have timed this any better. What was it? What was the Triple H line again? It was the Hamlet.
It was, I've got to get this right, the head honcho of the Hamlet Hero to Humans fan club.
That fantastically alliterative title. I'm not going to repeat that. Will forgive me, because I did tweet this just yesterday, because the video happened to appear, or a version of this angle happened to appear. One of my very favourite main event mafia angles was, in fact, post-demise of the main event mafia, because it's one of my very favourite comedic wrestling tropes, which is massive, dangerous, jacked guy doesn't realise that he's not in a storyline that he thinks he's in, right? You've got Sean Stasiak constantly trying to attack The Rock, and The Rock having no idea it's happening. And you've got Scott Steiner in 2009 not realising that the main event mafia isn't a thing anymore. This phenomenon occurred. So the main event mafia had been this really big deal, headed up by Kurt Angle and Sting. Sting was babyface leaning. Kurt Angle was absolute out and out heel. And they joined up with Kevin Nash, Booker T, and Scott Steiner and Sharmell. And they were running roughshod over the babyface front line of TNA. It was kind of a, you know, line in the sand, heels versus babyface, stable war sort of thing. But Sting, his anger was born out of genuine disrespect. There was the likes of the Motor City Machine Guns, who were young guys, but didn't treat him with the respect he believed he deserved. Kurt Angle played up to that and used it to abuse the power. So there was a nice dynamic there. Sting and Kurt Angle eventually came apart. The main event mafia was reshaped a little bit. He brought longtime rival Samoa Joe in.
I remember
who came in along with Taz. They had their security force. They became more of a generic bully heel stable over time. And then gradually, as these things do, they kind of filtered off into new programs. There was various contractual changes with some of the guys. I think Booker T might have left around this time. But either way, things were changing.
That before or after he had the accent?
After. That was peak main event mafia stuff. That's, you know, you've got the accent, you've got the main event mafia edition of Impact with Black Snow and Chet Lemon on the call.
Oh yes.
Scott Steiner playing ring announcer. There were some great moments in the main event mafia, but the roots of it were potentially a little bit damaging because they did go over quite a lot. So the front line didn't really rise up and topple them much in the end. They kind of came away because they decided to. Factions just fall apart as they do. But brilliantly, nobody told Scott Steiner. So it's coming to quite a big moment in TNA's history. It's late 2009, and the announcement has been made that Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff will be coming in early 2010. TNA's had a good second half of the 2000s, and it's had momentum, and it's had support, and acts have gotten over and stayed over. And naively, perhaps, but with some optimism, the addition of Hulk Hogan will seem to be that, an addition. Rather than an absolutely disgusting subtraction and an addition of the likes of the Nasty Boys and Bubba the Love Sponge, it was instead just a subtraction of loads of the things that you really, really liked in place of these losers. So yeah, we find the main event mafia pretty much split up and going their own way. Hulk Hogan coming in, and it kind of being one of them things where it's the hot topic, right? It's there. Whatever was the past of TNA is the past, because we're moving into the brave new future. Unless you've got Steiner.
So Mick Foley is on the phone. He's walking backstage. He's got an eye patch on.
Right, yeah.
Did he do a pirate gimmick at this time? Or
he was selling, I cannot remember who, somebody tried to blind him, I think. I can't remember who that was.
So yes, and throughout the time he's walking down this corridor, you can always hear Scott Steiner. He's just yelling at this poor seamstress. And he's going, "I'm main event mafia! You got to fix this up, hurry up!" Foley comes in, he's like, "Scotty, can I just have a word?" Does he call him Mitch here, first of all?
Oh, yeah, he's Mitch Foley, yeah.
He says, "Mitch, can you believe this bimbo here? I wanted to make more main event mafia stuff, and she's got wings over here." And she picks up some wings, and they ironically go flying. And Foley goes, "Well, Kurt kind of alluded to the fact there's no more main event mafia." And honestly, go and watch this, right? Shout out to Justin on Twitter, who shared this that we subsequently have watched it on, and blah, blah, blah. I found the YouTube video for the comments and what have you, but this is the best acting performance of Scott Steiner's career. Kurt kind of alludes to the fact there's no more main event mafia. Scott goes, Kurt said there's no, he gets serious, he gets quiet. He says the Michael Cole serious voice.
Yeah.
Kurt said there's no more. Foley says, well, he didn't say, he alluded to it. Scott Steiner leaps on this like a dog on hot chips. But he didn't say it. Foley. No, he didn't. He didn't say it! He celebrates like he scored a last-minute winner or something.
There is an implication here that's not that tacit, that Scott Steiner doesn't know what alluded means and is choosing not to find out.
Yeah.
It's great. It's just so great.
He didn't say it! He turns back to the team just, see! The Mafia lives! As long as I'm here, the Mafia lives! Get your ass back on the sewing machine!
The Mafia lives. I popped so hard for that. The Mafia lives. So like, they've broken up as a result of like being beaten and toppled as well. So like the thing he's fighting for and the thing he's holding on to is a long dead concept. It's not
the,
even good.
It's still good, but yeah, with the main 100%. Event Mafia. So Foley then whispers, Scotty, I never really worked with Hulk Hogan much. I don't know him that well, but I know you guys did in WCW. What can you tell me about the Hulk? The Hulk.
The Hulk.
Personally. Stanley goes, personally? He goes, Mick, I didn't date him.
Where did that, like... Nobody was thinking that, Scott. Amazing.
I don't know anything about him personally, but as far as business goes, we were in the NWO, man. We were a band of thieves, and there was honor amongst thieves. Let me ask you something. Who's the smartest guy you know? Foley goes, that I know? And he goes, not that I know, that you know. Foley says a name.
Yeah.
But it's bleeped. This Gewirtz?
Well, this was bleeped at the time, right? So it was either Brian Gewirtz or Vince McMahon. Because of what he credits next. And he misspeaks here, and I watched it.
I don't know
it.
If that's intentional or not.
I don't know, because Foley was kind of a clown in this whole situation as well. He was gradually losing grip on everything. Or he had lost grip, and he picked it back up. That happened a lot in Impact. But, yeah, so, like, this is all so knowingly silly. I'm not sure if the, like, the malprop here is by design.
Yeah, he says a name, but it's bleeped. And he says, that's the guy who came up with the Ron Simmons... What gimmick?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he said. Remember when he used to say the four letter word they used to say and print it on t-shirts? The what thing?
Yeah, somebody would do a bit and then Ron Simmons would come and go, what?
I think that's it. I think there's no way that, because he says it so confidently.
Yeah.
So he says that's the smartest guy he knows. Steiner goes, well, times that by 10. Hogan is a master manipulator. I mean, he doesn't say manipulator, but we're not going to get into the weeds here. And I did like this. I wrote this line verbatim. I tell you what, these young punks have no idea the storm on the horizon for on their ass. Verbatim what he said.
So we've had Steiner maths, now it's Steiner English.
Yes. He says, Foley says, one more thing. Who's he close with? If he would have come in, I mean, I've heard he's not coming alone. Who'd he bring with him? Scott Steiner says, Mick. Who do I look like? Nostradamus? I mean, he doesn't say Nostradamus. He gives up halfway through saying the word. But we get where he goes.
What
going
a pull.
And he says, I can't see the future. I have no idea what you're talking about. Who said he was coming with somebody? And so he disbelief.
Yeah.
And Foley says one word. Mm-hmm. And Scott Steiner's world crumbles around him. He goes, Kevin. Scott Steiner goes, right, I'm getting serious now. It's like Bono taking the sunglasses off. He goes, Kevin. I mean, if Kevin said that, it's got to be true. He does not lie. And in the midst of all this, Foley's like, okay, fair enough. Thanks, mate. This poor seamstress turns around and goes, Scott, do you want this done as is, like as you've given it to me? He's like, get on with it. She goes, well, it's just there's only one F in Mafia. Died. And he goes, well, you put the F where the sun don't shine. Just do it the way I put it. Get back to work. Come on, Jolene. I got people to beat up.
I mean, so this is brilliant, right? This is absolutely brilliant. I'll level with you, right? You told me, pick something TNA, Main Event Mafia, if you like. And I thought of this pretty much straight away. But there was a segment from a similar period that I thought about that I can't remember if we've done. And certainly we can go granular another day with it for another 5-star review. But Foley, at the time, basically meandered backstage trying to catch up on all the gossip was going on as if he couldn't access the internet.
Yes.
That's kind of his gimmick, right? So he would ask people for advice on Hogan and what. Like, he's lost control in TNA and it's like, what's going on, blah, blah, blah. TNA was the company that could do this. But because of this, it was like, well, now we're going to make you sit through this. And there was a segment right around this time where Foley is walking down a corridor, and I've definitely shown this in the office before for like a list or something. And somebody goes, come in. And he opens the door. And there's Ed Ferrara and your pal Vince Russo sat at a table. And Mick Foley says, guys, you're two of the most like creative guys in the industry. I cannot, for the life of me, get a hold of Dixie Carter and find out what's going on with Hogan, all this sort of stuff, right? Can you write a vignette where I call Dixie and she answers?
What the hell?
That is, like, similar to the Buff Bagwell part, like, that's carnage in terms of, like, narrative on a wrestling show. But you couldn't... Impact was great, because if you didn't have people with a willingness to do that, you probably wouldn't get Scott Steiner and Mick Foley doing, like, what, tantamount to Saturday Night Live bit backstage, where Steiner, the most dangerous man you know, is spelling mafia wrong.
Also, I'm going to squeeze this in because it's part of this thread from... I'm going to read out his Twitter handle if we want to go and check
it out. He's a fantastic follow.
At Justin underscore S of OK.
Yeah, just perpetually on the TNA watch along. There's not a single thread of his. That's a recent favourite of ours. The Hotel Bar!
The Hotel Bar!
Tom West turned on Mike tonight and just getting pissed down at the Hotel Bar! It's like TNA's best bits clipped, just timeless content on his timeline.
So directly under this is a little 16-second clip. Mm-hmm. Scott Steiner, Christy Hemme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he effectively threatens to beat up Bobby Lashley's son, Miles.
Much like, as say, like the Judgment Day would with Dominic Mysterio.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Except for the fact, Christy Hemme goes, wait, Bobby's son, Miles, he's like 2 years old. And he goes, no. He's one and a half. And he goes, I'm going to do this off mic so you get the experience of this. I hope the mic picks this up. So he's doing a promo down the lens. He goes, well, he's one and a half. That's what's great about me. I don't discriminate against age. I'll beat anybody up! It's spectacular.
It's great stuff.
I have a newfound love, and I didn't think I could get any more in adoration for Scott Steiner, but this has really opened my eyes.
When you go diving into the YouTube comments, I'll be the one to confirm it for you. Like, I'm the one wanking watching this. Just because it's brilliant.
Well, we'll get to it.
Oh, God. There isn't actually...
Let me explain. Okay. So, these do not reflect the views myself, the Daddy Boys. I'll cover off Sid as well.
I think he'd like that, probably.
Yeah. Or anyone here at What Culture Wrestling. A few of them, it's not going to be too revelatory, these comments, mm-hmm. or too pervy. Everyone. CM Bell writes, well, he's a math genius, not a spelling genius, so makes sense. Two F's in Mafia. Yeah. A lot of people arguing that if Steiner says there's two F's in Mafia, there's two F's in Mafia.
Do you think all along it's Steiner Maths and it's MAFFS?
Master 5150 writes, well, Scott Steiner wasn't wrong about Hogan being a master manipulator. The dude went on to form one of the most fearsome, dominant, devastating factions in professional wrestling history. Immortal.
Ah, he nailed it.
HBK the Man writes, Scott reminds me of Eric Cartman sometimes, which is something I now cannot unhear.
Yeah.
Kick you in the nuts.
I can imagine him inheriting a massive fortune and opening Steinerland, where it's a theme park that nobody else can attend.
Him licking someone else's tears is something I can definitely see as well. Oh, let me taste your tears, Mitch. Bit of a depressing one, this.
Oh.
But we talked about it in the beginning of, this was the calm before the storm, as Steiner alluded to. Rob Kearsey writes, the storm on the horizon was, bit of a long one, this, trying to recreate WCW, drive fans away. Victory Road 2011, tried to redo Starrcade 97 with Hogan and Sting. Aces and Eights, no more Scott Steiner on TV. AJ Styles leaving, Jeff Jarrett leaving, Bobby Roode leaving, Chris Sabin being released, Sting leaving, Joe leaving, Daniels being released, Dixie's not being able to pay talent, and now they're on the verge of collapse.
Jesus Christ, mate.
That's just a small history of...
Everything's just got slow motion and black and white.
It's horrible.
I don't want to live through it in such a quick list like that.
Where'd Chris Sabin go, man?
Well, he's there now again, having a match of the year candidate because he's just this ageless pro wrestling genius.
So a little bit of a sneak peek into where the comments then go. Max A, I know we say this every week, but look somewhere else.
Oh, no.
Max writes, anyone know the full name of the sewing girl?
Get out.
She's get out. who's that woman in the background there? What we got going on?
And, this is hardly uploaded in 4K HD, is it?
No, it's just a woman.
You know, right, I'm not mega proud to admit this, but we're all young once. On the, in the UK, on our Sky television service, there was German channels that had WCW on, right? So I would watch a lot of my WCW in German. I don't know how I discovered this other than teenagers will find a way. But on the German channel's teletext, you could find rude teletext.
Yeah.
Neon coloured, pixelated, nude ladies. So I'm not sitting here as somebody judging that specifically. But as you've just pointed out, it's not 1997 anymore with primitive television.
Nope.
You are one tab away from anything your heart desires, unless apparently your heart desires the 6-second clip of a extra working to do a gag with Scott Steiner in the background.
And he's like, oh, maybe they used a shoot name. So Jolene or Jolene TNA sewing girl. Final comment. It relates to the Christy Hemme clip. So, yeah, buckle up. Christy Hemme's just interviewing Scott Steiner. She's just stood there and she just says, Miles is two.
Yeah.
And yet, in that time, Francis has seen this clip and gone, yeah, I need to share this with the world. He's just not like the views myself, Dad Boys, What Culture Wrestling. He simply writes, Christy Hemme, tongue punch in the fart box comes to mind. No, man, no. There's always one.
Does it come to mind? Does it?
Yeah, you know what comes to mind? Tongue punch in the fart box.
You know my...
That's one of my favourite phrases.
My parents never, ever stopped me watching wrestling. I know this was a strange phenomenon.
That's what you said following that.
Yeah. Strange phenomenon of like parents like sometimes seeing the Attitude Era or whatever. Except for one time. You remember that promo where the Warrior had been cursed and the goo came from the floor?
Yes.
And he goes, Warriors. And he left me and Gene alone on the podium. And I couldn't believe that I'd seen a curse take place on my favourite wrestler. And I turned to my mum and dad. And me and Gene just stood there shocked like the rest of us. And I said, Mum, Dad, I'd love to tongue punch his fart box.
Right. Thank you once again to Jason Fratto for that 5-star review. If you want to suggest something, not necessarily crap, but something short and wrestling related for us to review instead of, well, I normally would say a god-awful Raw segment, but that apparently isn't going to be the case going forward. Maybe something we don't have to watch in its entirety on Raw.
Do you know what I think is going to happen, right? We know they listen. Like, hi, Triple H. We really liked Raw last night. Well done. Hair ruffler for you. Mm-hmm. I predict next week he does the old Paul Heyman, Dawn Marie, Al Wilson trick and put something in there specifically just to be skipped one for the benefit of our podcast because he likes to reminisce and go back as well.
Indeed.
So, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, we had the Alexa Bliss Asuka match, which was quite enjoyable for the brief time we had it. Bayley, Kai, and Sky attack, DQ, no contest, whatever you want to call it. And just the glimpse of Io Sky. Yeah. I've done that twice already today. I did it on
it's
the news.
It's all right. It'll come quick enough.
Yeah. Of Sky setting up for that moonsault of hers, but with a steel chair on the top rope.
Yep.
Don't tease me with stuff like that.
Get the bin out.
Belair runs down to chase them all off before they can do it, though, and demands a match with any of them, which is set up for later. It's going to be her versus Io Sky. Yes, please.
Oh, my God.
Time for the other triple threat match now. It was Chad Gable. Thank you! Dolph Ziggler and Ciampa. And Chad Gable, quite rightly, this is another thing that should remain. It already did happen before the Triple H era, but it needs to be a staple. Chad Gable should never come to the ring without cutting a promo.
Quite right.
He comes out, shoes, please! Shoes! Fucking shoes! Yeah, it's TV14, isn't it? And he said, I'm going to win this match. I'm going to beat that ignoramus AJ Styles. I'm going to put this country on my back again. I'm a real winner, not a cheater like the Houston Astros. It always gets him. Every time the American audience.
Wait a minute, that's our team.
The story of this match was Dolph Ziggler's the babyface fighting from underneath against these two gits who do the age-old staple that I never get tired of, right, we're going to beat this guy, and then I'm going to pin him. Well, no, then I'm going to pin him. No, you're not going to fucking pin him. That's basically what happened.
This is the one thing we didn't want to happen.
I love it.
Never once think about it, do they?
Also, there was a bit where, that happens early on, yeah. You know, the numbers game. Gable puts Ziggler in an ankle lock. Ciampa puts him in a crossface. Gable's like, get off him, I'm submitting him. What would have happened if he'd have tapped out? Would the referee have gone, now you've tapped out there, yeah. Well, which move hurt the most?
This has actually happened before, hasn't it? Like, yeah. There's been matches like this where they're about to like throw things out or it's disputed or it takes place next week. I loved that it was as if like Gable's done his homework and I thought, well, this can't do.
Yeah.
This can't happen. Loved it.
Ciampa starts going at it with Gable, gives him with a leg lariat. He hits Ziggler with an air raid crash off the middle rope. Oh, that looked lovely. Mm-hmm. Gable breaks up the cover with a diving headbutt. Gable gives Ciampa a German suplex. But at the same time, Ziggler hits Gable with a zigzag. So that's both matches now where all three men have been involved in a single maneuver.
Yep.
And I loved it. they trade cradles. They trade counters. Ciampa hits that. It's just vicious. For, in WWE's eyes, a little guy.
Mm-hmm.
My God, Ciampa's knee strike makes me get a headache.
There was another good one on this. Like, barely flinging that one at Alexa Bliss.
Yeah, I thought you meant there was another good Ciampa one to come later. Mm. But anyway, hits Gable with a knee strike. Fairy tale ending, 1-2-3. Ciampa will face Styles. And the winner of that obviously faces Lashley. Another great triple threat, I thought.
Yeah, really strong stuff that, yet again, was kind of on the verge of becoming something really quite special. But I understand why they didn't go beyond what they already did. The two big takeaways here were, you will be in a better mood with good wrestling if the rest of the shows put you in a good mood. And I was way higher on this than I might have been in previous weeks because, of course, the roster's always got this in the locker, you know, and occasionally they're out there, let off the leash and allowed to do it. But you're in such a better mood with it when within the context of a show that you're enjoying. And I was really enjoying this Raw, so I really enjoyed this too. I'd been told that this mattered. The wrestlers made it look as if it mattered. And interestingly, I thought here as well, Dolph Ziggler, like, getting on the card as the utility babyface on a night where Theory doesn't even appear was, not for the first time this year, kind of a showing of, like, I would have never have thought this, Triple H especially seeming to have, like, an awful lot of respect for what he brings. You have to assume he had something to do with him being the guy that was the Bron Breakker,
yep.
Setter-upper.
Yeah, that's a good
point. It just sort of feels like I wouldn't have ever imagined that they would have still had time for Dolph Ziggler, but I guess he just appreciates, like, there's the utility guys in the business for a reason, and he must appreciate that about him because he could have picked, like, a lot. Like, if you look at Ali getting in the first match, you're thinking, well, there's probably a lot of people gasping for an opportunity, and you've chosen Dolph Ziggler.
And there's an opportunity in both matches, maybe less so in the opener, in the first of the triple threat, sorry, but there is an opportunity for shenanigans. I know there was shenanigans in the actual, you know, qualifying match between Styles and Ciampa. Mm-hmm. But you could argue, yeah, that Dolph Ziggler could have been affected by Theory. Chad Gable could have had Otis out there doing stuff for him. Ciampa could have had Miz, although I did like the thing later. But yeah, they just keep it simple. Speaking of which, actually, that was followed by an Edge promo. It was just like, there we go.
Mm.
Don't need any silly language. You don't need any bollocks. You just have Edge come out and be Edge. And he's great.
It was, I know, like, you're probably about to recap it. This was, like, very, very subtly apologetic without making him look weak, wasn't it?
To be fair, he says, for the past few months, I've been a bit of an asshole.
Yeah.
But all
happens
that
to us all. We all go through those stages in life.
All that changes now. We both get what we want. So, there you go. Big ovation for Edge as he came out, of course. And he's, again, he doesn't just sort of fob it off. Like you say, he just say, it was a bit weird, me just calling people sheeple and blah, blah, blah. But he said, look, the reason why I did it, there was a reason, was I thought I could pass my 30-year knowledge on to the likes of Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley. And it really started, we were getting on a roll. We're just getting started. But then their first taste of power clouded their judgment. They thought they'd learned all that they could. They were wrong. But I didn't see it coming when Finn Balor kind of got one over on me. And I admit that's a rarity, but fair play. But now it's the time to kill what I created. He's going to kill his creation. And he said, I'm going to kill Judgment Day. Well, it's the Judgment Day. How long next time, Adam? I love this. Simple, straightforward. I want to kill my own creation.
And like a good retcon for what has been a gaping plot hole for ages. Like him saying, like, obviously they thought after we were just getting it together that they'd got everything they were going to get from me. that is the best possible explanation of the ludicrous circumstances surrounding this group. One win with Edge, over Finn Balor, no less. And the thickos have gone, we need the guy that got beat.
Like, yeah, but
this was a fix.
It was justified, as I said at the time, I thought, because I thought they would be like, well, every time we win, we've had to get involved in it so that you could win it. You're an old guy and you've kind of told us everything.
Yeah, that's true, but...
I get it. It wasn't perfect.
This was as good a fix as you could have possibly had.
Speaking of people related to the Judgment Day, Rey and Dominic Mysterio are backstage. They're interviewed by... It wasn't Sarah Schreiber. It was Kevin Patrick! Race.
And he was tongue punching a dirt box.
Ray was...
tongue punch me dirt box!
Ray said they're done with the Judgment Day. Now they're going to... they're going to have to deal with Edge, Judgment Day, that is. And he said, oh, Edge's family. We won the tag team titles together. And tonight's all about one thing. We're going to beat the Usos. We're going to become the champions in Houston. And they do that little catchphrase of theirs. But this time Dominic says the last bit. Mm-hmm. He's growing his hair out to look like his real dad. Like he's there going, oh, yeah, we're his family. And we won the tag team titles. And Dominic, just for a split sec, I know I'm reaching maybe. For a split second, goes like, we are family, and we were the tag team champions as well.
Are you
and after
reaching?
What happened in the main event, maybe it's happening.
Yeah, I'm not sure you are reaching. And him wanting the last word, very literally in this case, was another nice detail. Like, it's hard.
Are we getting mullet law, by the way?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's being grown as part of an eventual, like, they're going to make an I'm
no
your...
No one actively chooses that haircut.
Nah, God no. They're going to make
that's
an
I'm... from me.
You know an I'm your pappy t-shirt? Like the one Rhea wore last week, the famous Eddie Guerrero one. They're going to make one that says, he's my pappy. And it's Dominic wearing it to neg Ray, basically. Look, it is really hard to book epic, all-time, fantastic pro wrestling. It's piss easy to book good wrestling.
Yes.
This was this.
Bailey gets interviewed by Sarah Schreiber and Bailey and her buddies. she says all these idiots talking about the women's division have been on a downward spiral since I left. So I've reached out to two women who've been waiting far too long for their moment. Dakota Kai says, we know how to play the game. Wait a second, Dakota. Does that mean?
It's time to play the game!
Do you think she scrolled through the WWE.com website to look for a woman she could call to try and get a job back? It's time to play the game. Bailey.
Nice touch that, though. And yep. And Io Sky says she'll see Belair out in the ring. Explanation of why they're together? Complete sense.
We're getting, is it a control? It's probably going to be the name as well. Felt like that was getting teased quite a lot tonight.
Although when Bailey tweeted it and then Braun Strowman subtweeted your narrative afterwards.
Oh, my God.
Don't ruin it.
Yeah, go away.
And then we got Bianca Belair versus Io Sky.
We saw Omos in the flesh, then we saw you the next day and we didn't think as much about you anymore. You failed our airport test. Control that narrative.
And a minute into the match, Io Sky hits a Sai moonsault and I go, there it is.
Yeah, really great.
Triple H era is here.
Oh, it's really great. Like, loads of the work. This went a long time, loads of the work, and this was really good.
So Belair takes control when we come back from the break. Down come Bailey and Dakota Kai to give a bit of distraction. That allows Sky to recover and hit a top rope Hurricane Rana. Slips out of a KOD, tries to dive off the apron, but Belair is just ridiculously strong, just catches her, holds her there, and then swings her into the barricade. Then Belair goes to throw Sky back in the ring, but Bailey and Kai just sit on the apron in her way, and the ref just stands there and yells at them. They don't do anything, but out comes Asuka and Alexa Bliss, remember from earlier, to even the odds and get him to piss off so the match can continue. Go to another break. When we come back, Belair hits a superplex and a standing moonsault for two. Sky fights back with a double foot stomp and a running knee strike in the corner. Just nice to see that on the main roster from Io Sky. Belair.
Corey Graves did this, by the way.
Yeah.
So you're not alone.
Belair hits a spine buster, but Sky gets her knees up on that handspring moonsault that Belair does. And then as Belair hits the ropes, Bailey trips her. Sky's got the referee, so the ref doesn't see it. Sky also then tries a cover with her feet on the ropes, but Bliss on the other side knocks him off. And then all of a sudden it breaks down and Bliss and Asuka jump in and they brawl with Dakota Kai and Bailey and it all just gets thrown out, basically. They keep brawling until officials have to separate them. There's even a let them fight chant because this isn't just a groan. Because again, I'm not happy about DQs, and I'm especially not happy about, like, here's a little bit of this, but mm-hmm. we're not going to give you the finish. But, yeah, you've come down, you've gone, we're here to make sure you don't piss about. And then the one time that the baby faces go, don't put your feet on the ropes.
Yeah.
They go, right, that's it, we've got to get in the ring. Like, as a heel mentality, that makes complete sense.
Yeah, I think, like, it's probably... it's more generous with WWE than we would ever be with AEW, but like these are absolutely case by case. This sort of finish. They did want to have the cake and eat it too by giving you what, the fat end of 15 minutes of a pretty great match. We can't even say this was the tease of what Belair and like Io Sky could do. They did it.
Yes.
The match happened bar the finish pretty much. And it was great. It was really good. And there was you were kind of sold down the river because you're watching it with the tension of wow, this is a big result here. Because Sky needs this win. But Bianca Belair's just had the biggest win of her career 2 nights earlier. So, who wins here? And they get out of it. And you're like, I wish they hadn't got out of it. But I'm with you, actually. And I think the fans were, hence the let them fight chant. And they're like, you've got to pick up the context clues sometimes from a finish like this. And again, this is a lot of giving the benefit of the doubt to Triple H. But there's always going to be these finishes in WWE. It's a way they choose to like to tell stories. And it becomes about limiting them to when it feels earned rather than just doing it because it's cheap and it's lazy. If in 3 weeks they're building a Raw main event, right? Let's say Clash at the Castle is going to be Bayley and Bianca Belair, right? And if in 3 weeks they're building a Raw main event, go home Raw, it's going to be for the first time on Monday Night Raw ever, Bianca Belair versus Dakota Kai. Big main event. Dakota Kai's there to soften up Bianca Belair for Bayley, and like that's thrown out and it's the main event. Then it's probably time to go, well, you're just as bad as your old man.
Yes.
What are you, like, this is different. And yeah, the pull apart was great. And just honestly, it's not, they've done well weirder things than this. 3 weeks ago, like if this is all happening, which it wouldn't have done because Vince McMahon didn't like the Bayley Stable idea, that's out there. But if this was all happening, Alexa Bliss and Asuka were just there just because. Mm. Not because something was set up earlier in the night or a reason for them to coexist for the benefit of this greater good, the situation that, well, hang on, they beat us up earlier on. So it stands, and she saved us. So it stands to reason that we pay them back. This isn't even, and like I loved all those wrestlers, but this isn't even the NXT, hey, we're calling a bunch of you up. You're all in trios now. Suck it up. This isn't that. There is a justification for the reason why all of these have come together. And even if it's, like, we know what's going on here. You've created drama in the division by just basically, like, it's just this inserting six women into a bunch of individual singles and tags. Mm-hmm. They've done it the organic way. They've gone the right way about doing it. And this is before you've explored the narrative potential of reintroducing Rhea Ripley and what a cool spot she had later on in the show. Carmella and... what was the name of Carmella's partner?
Queen Zelina!
That was it. And the potential return, as you've sort of posited, of Sasha and Naomi.
Yeah.
Like, they are not yet at full capacity. Like, Nikki Ash has got that partner. Who's she got?
Yeah,
who the two of them were supposed to be getting serious, and it just hasn't happened. But turns out that, I'm going to keep saying this because I think it's about time that we just make it real. The best North American women's wrestling booker ever can probably fix mm-hmm. that
yeah.
and can probably fix it for those two too. Like, if you're a woman right now on this roster for the first time in Christ forever, like literally forever, you're probably like looking at the situation, looking at the lay of land thinking, hang on, is this a good place to work now?
I think Nikki A.S.H. is going to cut the 7 promo.
Yeah.
Oh, she could take a good long look at all this crap they got me dressing up here. Put the mask off. I'm going to go back to being mint at wrestling. Superhero.
Do drop at the same time. And what the... because I do drop.
Aye. Do it. Right. Kevin Patrick goes and interviews Miz... Kevin Patrick goes and interviews Miz and Ciampa, and Miz says, yes, and this isn't a playground for YouTubers. I was cheated at SummerSlam. I blame AJ Styles. And Ciampa said he used to respect Styles and his path to WWE, but Styles chose to support a man who made a mockery of their home, and now he's going to crush Styles' US title dreams. And Miz says, yeah. I mean, he didn't really help me much later, but earlier on, sorry, but he's going to become a champion under my tutelage.
Great fundamentals. Brilliant. Yeah, we'll come to that later. Because, like, a lot of it is obviously saved for the preview stuff. But the cool thing about actually setting stuff up means that you can talk about it as it's happened as well as looking forward to it the following week. Mm. Imagine that.
And we're not here next week because next Monday is my birthday.
Oh, yeah.
We're going away together.
Me and you are going on holiday, aren't we?
But, yeah.
Is your wife going to join my wife and take my kids away for a week? Because I'm supposed to be off all of next week to go on an actual holiday, but I might sign off on this agreement if it means that me and you are just going out on the drink for your birthday.
So. Yes.
We can take the dual doghouses for one very good night.
I just love the idea of, on the one hand, you've got next week. I'm going to talk about it now because we ain't going to have a chance to preview it. It's going to be
Solo Sikoa. I've got next week off.
So you either potentially get Ciampa becoming United States champion,
yeah,
which is bad for Bobby Lashley, but potentially could free him up for a world title thing. So, okay. But great for Ciampa.
Mm.
Or Miz costs Ciampa and starts beating the crap out of him when they're in Cleveland, and if only there was someone there who's got a history from Cleveland with Ciampa.
Can you imagine Murray on the Raw review, like, sigh of relief that he's not going to AEW? Like, it's two big wins.
I love God.
Two big wins. I love him as well. I think he'd be amazing anyway.
Literally one half of my favourite wrestling match of all time.
I do really like this booking, and I like it even more if he brings Candice LeRae with him, because if only there was a bunch of women suddenly on the Raw roster that she could have bangers with.
Yeah, and they wouldn't do the spiteful thing of putting on separate rosters, because that git's gone now.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Things might be a bit better.
Yeah. Maybe we'll get one final beat on the main. Oh, don't.
Yeah, you ruined it. No. And it's gone.
So, spoiler alert, yeah, Ciampa beat Styles. That was next. We had Booker T on commentary, got a nice ovation from the hometown crowd, of course. These two just worked brilliantly together as well. Styles in control, Ciampa counters the Styles clash and just starts battering him and hits him with a leg lariat for a two. Again, Ciampa counters the Styles clash, but then Styles suplexes him into the turnbuckles. He goes for the phenomenal forearm, but oh, this high knee strike that just comes out of nowhere from Ciampa. Takes his head off. That gets a near fall. Project Ciampa, another two count. He sets up for an air raid crash, but Styles counters into a Styles clash. And Styles has got it won, but Miz puts Ciampa's foot on the bottom rope for a rope break.
Mm-hmm.
Styles, furious at this, chucks Miz into the timekeeper's area. But Ciampa's recovered. He follows Styles out there. He drives him into the ring post, Ciampa does to Styles, and then chucks him into the timekeeper's area. Dives back into the ring. He'll take the win, whatever mate comes. And Styles is trying to get out of the timekeeper's area, but Miz is there grabbing onto his foot. Ref can't see it, obviously. Styles gets him off, dives back in just to beat the 10 count, and then gets absolutely nailed with a fairy tale ending after a knee strike that just, again, rattled his brain. 1-2-3. Tommaso Ciampa is the new number one contender for the US title.
A good match with a great finish.
Yes.
An absolutely fantastic finish. So the Miz hiding, like that shot that we got of the Miz hiding and the referee not being thick for a change because you can't see. You cannot see the Miz, but we can. And it's that perfect pantomime. It's like he's behind you, you know, like we can all scream as loud as we want, but the referee cannot see it, so he cannot call what he can't see. Brilliant. But then the fact that that's not the finish and that Ciampa gets it done on his own. Yes, he's a heel and yes, he'll take the help. But as it turns out, he maybe didn't need it. Mm-hmm. Like that's, talk about it's quite a lot. Plausible deniability, like heels, baby faces, they all have to believe it's real. The heels have to believe that what they're doing, even if it looks fundamentally wrong, there is a reason that they feel justified in doing so. As the Miz will do if, as you potentially suggested, he turns on him next week because of that little neggy comment he made. Well, he didn't help me at SummerSlam, did you? And I helped you. So we're not exactly even here, are we? Like, you've kind of got an away goal in Europe out of me, and I got nothing. I got Jack. Like, where were you for me in the first triple threat of the night? All this sort of, like, the Miz has got all these things.
If there's
one guy that remembers what goes on in his career, it's the Miz, right? So he'll have that all lined up and ready to go. Ciampa will be, like, if Ciampa does lose to Bobby Lashley, it won't be a credibility buster because he won't have seen the Miz's treachery coming. That match should be great. It's brand new. It's fresh. There's a good chance that based on, like, the meat they put into it in the show, that this goes on as the main event next week.
I agree.
So that's going to be like an elevated stage for Ciampa. Wins all over. This is a good match, but I mean, AJ Styles and Ciampa kind of do that in their sleep. The finish was what mattered here, and it was tremendous.
And as we alluded to on the preview, Lashley seemingly to suggest he's going to defend the title, US title, all the time, any place sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like he said, and he puts over Ciampa. He says he knows he's dangerous, especially with Miz by his side, but he's still going to put him in a hurt lock and win. And then just before the main event, we saw the footage of Brock Lesnar climbing up Mount Wrestling Ring to salute the crowd, which was just a fantastic image. And then
Mount Everest Ring.
Very good.
There you go.
Main event, it was the Mysterios versus the Usos for the Undisputed Tag Team Championships. Dominic takes out the Usos with a dive to take us to a break very early on into this match. When we come back...
Kilimanjaro, Man Reigns.
Usos work over Reigns. When we come back and he finally makes a hot tag to Dominic. Neck breakers to both Usos, but Jimmy avoids a 619 and the Usos then catch Dominic on a 6-1 on a dive attempt. Send him into the ring post. That takes us to another break. Again, after that, Ray gets the hot tag, but Jay super kicks him out of midair for a two count. He counters the 1D, does Ray, before tagging in Dominic, and they give a 619, double 619 to Jimmy. Dominic hits the frog splash, and Jay, at the very last second, the crowd thought this was a title change.
Me too.
Jay dives in, breaks up the cover, and then Jay super kicks Ray outside the ring. Dominic takes him out with a dive. Dominic fights with Jimmy on the top rope, sets him up with a 619, for a 619, sorry. But Jay makes a blind tag and they hit him for the 1D for the one and done. We the ones, the Usos, still the tag team champions. And then post-match, in come the Judgment Day. They attack the Mysterios. Rhea Ripley chokes out Dominic Mysterio.
Incredible scenes, this was.
Incredible simping on the internet I've seen after this as well. Never seen so many people want to be Dominic Mysterio in that moment. Edge runs out, though, to make the save. He hits Priest with a DDT, sets up Balor for a spear. But at the last second, Ripley pushes Dominic in front of Balor. Edge spears the life out of Dominic Mysterio. The Judgment Day bail, and Ray and the medics check on Dom as we go off the air. And, oh, just a phenomenal conclusion to this show.
Wicked match that had absolutely no right to be as good as it was. I completely bit on that near fall. Dragged, kicking and screaming into the drama of this in a way that, being truthful, I didn't get out of the Street Profits and the Usos at SummerSlam. Like, that's how, like, captured I was by the story in the moment. The crowd were mega up for it. I genuinely believe, you know, and, like, this isn't going to be borne out every single week. But I'd honestly, like most people... If you look online, even the reaction is the same. A lot of people had a really good time with this show, and it helps everything else. It does. It elevates everything else, you know. It's like hot openers being like the perfect start to a good pay-per-view and putting you in a good mood. This main event was better as a result of this show being good. If you'd have had like 2 hours, 2.5 hours of just the usual Monday Night Raw nonsense, and you're tired and you're getting a bit bored, and you know what it's like when you're at these tapings and wrestlers got to stand in the ring for ages like idiots. Who knows how this match would have been received, and if the virtually impossible would have suddenly been made real by a good two count. And I think this was a total over delivery of a main event, and one we'll maybe even remember a little bit. Like, especially if this is to be the big sort of flashpoint moment in the Mysterio story, which it felt like it was. I mean, we would know that because we've said all along when the actual turn's going to happen. The spear.
Don't need to say it now.
No, not now. Why would we bother? It's out on plenty of other podcasts. The spear, right? It's really hard to I speared you by accident, because you've got a pretty long run up. Like,
you've definitely got that hair out of your face. You always used to make sure that was...
Exactly.
He hasn't got it now.
It's not even in his eyes, is it? So it's a hard sell, and yet I kind of bought it, and the impact looked amazing, and it had to look amazing.
Gore.
It did, right? And it had to look amazing, because the whole show was going to go off the air with Rey Mysterio, my son! So imagine if, like, it was one of them limp-running hugs, and then he'd be like, my son! And he says, all right, Dad, I'm fine. Like, yeah. These things had to all come together the way they did for any of this to register. And it all registered. Like, hot ending.
Yeah. Hot ending to a very different Monday Night Raw.
Like, genuinely.
Excited for the future.
Genuinely, long may this continue, because basically I'm scared it won't. So, like, give 6 months and let's see how this goes. And, like, if the stock plummets and it turns out Vince McMahon's illogical, mind-bending, ludicrous claptrap was what made money, then maybe we'll all just have to concede and go back to making sure that these billionaires stay billionaires. But in the meantime, I just wouldn't mind a nice wrestling show. Thanks very much.
Times are changing. Let us know your thoughts on Monday Night Raw on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at...
Michael Hamflett.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. And if you want a 5-star review, you can leave one, just like Jason Fratto did. Leave it on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review on there. Suggest something short, crap, and wrestling-related for us to review instead of something on Monday Night Raw. Or you can leave us a 5-star review on Spotify and email me your review, adam.wilborn@whatculture.com. But for now, this has been the Raw Review. We'll be back later with the NXT 2.0 review. My thanks to Michael Hamflett. Thank you for joining us, and we We'll see you soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.